Welcome back to the Aware Show. I am Lisa Garr. And if you saw Oprah's Super Soul Sunday this last week, you would see my wonderful guest, Lynn Twist. She has written an incredible book called The Soul of Money. And more than ever, Lynn has spent so much time in the Amazon with the incredible Pachamama Alliance that she has created, supporting the indigenous people in the Amazon rainforest and their culture. She brings to us in the West with the incredible and practical advice of how it relates to our experience with money. Welcome to the show, Lynn. Thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, thank you, Lisa. I'm just delighted to be on your show. Thank you so much for having me today in particular.
Yes, yes. You have just had an amazing experience with Oprah, and it's on your website, lynntwist.com, or it's on Oprah's website also, right? The show?
Yes, right. When you go to Oprah Winfrey, there I am. I had to pinch myself every time I go there, and I go there like 10 times a day just to make sure it's still true.
That it's still there. Well, tell me a little bit about your book, The Soul of Money, and what you wrote. How do you transform your relationship with money?
Well, I wrote the book, The Soul of Money, as a result of working for many, many years as what I call a pro-activist, which means an activist for, not against, many issues, in particular ending world hunger, empowering the status of girls and women, in empowering indigenous people to protect their lands and cultures. And really the largest way of saying all of that is to bring forth an environmentally sustainable, spiritually fulfilling, and socially just human presence on this planet, which is a broad statement, and that's actually the mission of the Pachamama Alliance. And when you work on those kinds of things, you become both a fundraiser and a philanthropist yourself. You put everything you've got in it, both your heart and soul and love and energy, but also your money, and you invite everybody around you to do the same thing. And so I've been a fundraiser and a philanthropist for 40, 50 years, really a long time, my whole life, really. And I learned a lot about money. I learned how much suffering there is in people's relationship with money, how kind of crazy we are around money. And, we all think it's kind of like just us, but it's kind of like everybody, including people who are enormously wealthy. They're nutty about money, too. So I started looking kind of underneath the rocks and realized that there's a total huge amount of suffering in people's relationship with money. They can't talk about it. They think it's all their fault. If they have more money than they ever dreamed of, sometimes they're embarrassed and horrified by that, or so terrified that they'll lose it that they can't enjoy it. Mm-hmm. They don't have enough, which is most people's experience. They're frantically chasing more in a way that they don't even realize what they have. You know, we're just all kind of nuts about money. So I really got into that topic because I'm committed to transformation and saw that we can transform our relationship with money. And that's what the book, The Soul of Money, is all about.
Well, let's start off by talking about the relationship that indigenous cultures have with money. Explain that.
Well, first of all, indigenous cultures, the ones that we work with, the Achuar, the Zapara, the Shiwiar, the Walrani, the Andoans, the Kichuas, they didn't even know there was a thing called money. So my work with them, which has been in the last 23 years, really revealed the most amazing insights, because they said in the very beginning of our encounter with them, way, way back in the 90s, well, you can't hunt for it, you can't eat it. Mm-hmm. Why does everybody want it? And they couldn't even comprehend that, because they live in the rainforest. They have everything they need right there. They're prosperous. They're healthy. They're not sick. They're not poor. But they don't have any money. And everything about money, when they started having their encounters with the outside world, was strange to them, because they saw that people were completely obsessed with this inanimate object that didn't come from the natural world, that didn't really do anything, but that people felt was the most important thing in their life. And it was baffling to them. And looking at the whole money system through their eyes, or our relationship with money through their eyes, I started to see how pathological we are about it, really, that we've made it more important than human life. We've made it more important than our relationships. We've made it more important than kind of like anything, when in fact it's actually a means to support and serve the things we care about, but we've made it the destination rather than the fuel to get to the destination. So we've kind of lost our way with money, and they could see that right away. And when I stood, quote unquote, in their moccasins, I could see it too. I could see how caught and trapped we are by our own creation. We invented this stuff, you know?
We did create it, absolutely. What is life like without money in these indigenous tribes? Are they still trading and having services-oriented lifestyles?
Yes, that's a wonderful question. Thank you for asking that. Because they, for example, if you help me build my house, my straw roof, my dwelling place in the forest for my family, and you're an indigenous person living nearby, if you help me, and that's the way everything works there, everybody supports everybody, then I'll, of course, be available to you for your daughter's wedding feast and help with that. If you hunt and fish for my family, and I'm an indigenous man, when I leave the territory, when I have to go or when I get sick, I'll hunt and fish for your family when you're sick. So everybody owes everybody all the time in a very beautiful way. And that's what holds the fabric of the tribe and the community together. The security is in the relationships. It's not an accumulation of anything. It's in the relationships, and it's in the trust and reciprocity that is part of the natural relationship of human beings. And that holds everything together. When you introduce money into that system of, you know, give and take and taking care of each other, if you help me build my house and I pay you, that's it. That breaks the relationship. That's the end. So they don't want to have any money in their culture with each other. They know in order to deal with the outside world, they need to have money. You know,
right.
They can't buy a sick child out in a small plane. This is a place where there's no roads, so any emergencies, they have to get a small plane to come in and pick up an urgent medical case, and you have to pay for that. So they need money to deal with the outside world, but they have decided we are never going to use money with each other because it will break the fabric of our community. And in their way of seeing the world, the community, the well-being, the health and well-being of the community is the highest good. And then within that, people are taken care of or they individuate. We individuate so much that we individuate almost at the expense of the community. And that's a very different way of living. So we have to shore up resources to protect ourselves from other people or from disasters when, in fact, their security is in the relationships they have with each other. So I don't know if I've answered your question, but that's kind of how it works.
It's so amazing to think that there are still cultures that exist that are far, far away from civilization that still exist on this trust and trade and helping each other completely sustainably, where they live and they raise children and they grow old and generation after generation after generation are still living this way. And it's
well, and there's people in other places too. So I just want to say there's thousands and thousands and thousands of alternative or what are called complementary currencies in the world today where money comes into existence through the trust of the relatedness. So in our formal money system that is supported by the banking industry, money comes into existence as debt. So most people don't know this, but the money system causes debt. So every dollar that comes into existence from the Federal Reserve, which is actually a private company, when the government of the United States says you need to print more money, the Federal Reserve does so, but if they print $1,000, they print it with interest attached. So money that comes into existence all has interest attached. So there is always less money in circulation than is owed. So we live in a debt culture, a debt society, a deficit relationship from the get-go. And that's the money system we live inside of. Other money systems, money comes into existence through relationship. So if I say, I'll be on your show, and you promote my book. So, you know, we're now doing something where it's reciprocity. I'm delighted to be on your show, and today perhaps I'm the guest that you were hoping for.
Yes.
I'm completely thrilled to be on your show because this is the week that my book has come out and I want as many people as possible to buy it. So we're doing something reciprocal here. No money's involved. And much of life is actually like that. The most satisfying parts of life are like that. And at the same time, we do need money. So I'm not saying money should be out of the picture. But if we can put more of our attention on the reciprocity that allows for so much bounty in our lives, if we put our attention on that and put sort of money in the background as something that supports that rather than is the point of that, we have a different relationship with money.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I want to ask you really quickly about this. The fact that we can bring this energy of these indigenous cultures still into this world, in the West, is fantastic, the way that you explain it. And, look, we're paying taxes. The whole money system in the United States has been so twisted, has been so overmodulated that we have lost track of this beautiful, simple trade concept. And now, even to get back to that, if we're a business and we charge for our services, there is only the reciprocation of money now that comes back and forth, other than what you and I are doing right now. We're doing a beautiful reciprocal sharing here on the air so more people can get your message. And I want to let the world know, get Lynn's book, and this is it's a great opportunity for us to create this kind of a trade. But look at how every single system, the minute we walk off of this interview, is based on money. From the car that we're going to get into to the house that we live in and the phone that we're talking on, it's all based on money. How do we get back to the basics, Lynn?
Well, I love the examples you're using because actually it's a function of where our attention is as much as it is any kind of a system. So for the example with you and me, let's say today me being on your show, this being a good week for me to be speaking about this topic because of my book. That's a reciprocity that's working for both of us. But if your intention for having me on the show is all about making money for your program, and my intention on being on your show is all about making money for me out of my book, the intention of our interaction starts to shift to greed, to accumulation, and it's not satisfying.
Right.
But when our attention is, you and I are admirers of each other, fans of each other, we love each other, let's work together to promote what works for you and what works for me, our attention is on what we already have rather than what we don't have. Part of the problem is the consumer society brainwashes us to want what we don't have, instead of paying attention to and appreciating and being grateful for what we do have and sharing it. When you're grateful for what you do have and you share it, you have a sense of prosperity. If you just think about a potluck supper, when you come to a potluck supper with your favorite dish, the one your grandmother told you how to make, and you spend some time making it and you bring it, you feel so wonderful that people are enjoying it and it has your name on it, my chicken cacciatore from Grandma Susie. And then somebody else has their macaroni and cheese from their cousin Addie. You know, and the table is just filled with bounty, and it's people's contribution and people's love. That's very different than going to a very high-end restaurant where I love high-end restaurants, by the way, but where the food, little tiny portions with the salmon piled on top of this thing and piled on top of that thing, and some chef that's paid a fortune, and it costs you $85 to take a bite, whereas the potluck supper is an experience of everybody sharing, everybody giving. The experience of prosperity you get when you're in the space of sharing or when you're sharing is true prosperity. When you're accumulating or showing off or being, kind of high-end, you don't actually get the experience of prosperity. You get the experience or generosity. You get the experience of, elitism or standing out or maybe being better than the other guy. It's not that nourishing, frankly.
Yeah.
So I don't mean that I love great restaurants. I'm just trying to point out that it's actually where we're coming from, our attitude, how we are approaching life that can take the sting and the upset and the anxiety, relax it around money, and actually, if we pay attention to what we already have, the bounty of our lives, the beauty of our relationships, the health and well-being of our bodies and our families, the fact that you and I and the people listening, we have more friends than we can keep up with, rather than thinking, oh, I don't have enough time to take care of my friends, put your attention on, gosh, I have so many friends. I live in a bounty of love and relatedness. Or you can put your attention on, oh, shoot, I don't have enough time to spend any time with my friends. That's a scarcity mentality with the same facts, the same content. But when the context shifts to appreciation, to gratitude, to sufficiency, to being in touch with the bounty, I have this phrase I use in the Soul of Money book called, what you appreciate, appreciates. So we have enormous power by just shifting our attention, our intention, and the conversation or narrative we're living in. That actually has more power than anything. And we all think, well, if I just had more money, everything would be fine. Well, maybe. I think that would be good. I hope you have more money. I'd like to have more money, too. However, when we have more money, you know, if you think, I just need 30% more, and then everything will be fine. Well, think 30% ago, and now you have 30% more. Is it fine? No, you think you need 30% more again. So it's an endless chase.
Can we talk about that? How much do we really need? Can we talk about that? Because you
I have a thing I call the principle of sufficiency. So, but first, let me just say, I think we're all trapped in a mindset of scarcity that's promoted by consumer culture.
Yes.
I'm not tall enough. I'm not young enough. I'm not this enough. We don't have this enough.
Yes.
We don't have enough of that. And that's a kind of a frantic way of living. But that same exact set of circumstances can be reframed with what I call the principle of sufficiency, which is another word for enough. So let me just say that principle, because that's kind of the heart of what I want to say, and that is the following. If you let go of trying to get more of what you don't really need, which is what our culture promotes you wanting more of or brainwashes you to want more of, if you let go of that chase for trying to get more of what you don't really need, it frees up oceans of energy that's all tied up in that chase to turn and pay attention to what you already have. Actually pay attention to what you already have. Be grateful for it. Nourish it. Love it. And share it. Make a difference with it. Mm. When you turn and make a difference with what you already have and share what you already have, it expands before your very eyes. Let me say that again. If you let go of trying to get more of what you don't really need, it frees up oceans of energy to turn and make a difference with what you have. When you make a difference with what you have, when you nourish it, when you share it, it expands. So it's counterintuitive maybe, but it totally works. And then the short version is what you appreciate. That's the key to having the experience of enough, which is almost not available in consumer culture. You have to really wipe away the mindset of scarcity, and waiting for all of us is this exquisite experience of enough, in fact, that overflows into true abundance and prosperity.
The culture that you're talking about, that this brainwashing culture that says you need this piece of jewelry or this handbag or this house or this bed, and there's so many mattresses along the side of the freeway. Do we all really need more mattresses? But anyway, the idea of this is that you have this idea of needing more, but we're brainwashed into and we're being sold 53 times a minute that we need more. How do you counter that level of marketing?
Well, it's hard. I'm not saying this is easy, but if you make a commitment to actually stand in your own wholeness, your own sufficiency, your own true bounty, you experience enormous, enormous gratitude, which is just completely transformational. You know, people right now who are listening, put their hands on their heart right now. Cross your hands on your heart and think of something you're super grateful for. Just one thing. It might be a grandchild. It might be the chair you're sitting in that you love. It might be the fact that you love this program. It might be, you know, that you recovered from cancer. It might be how much you love your daughter, your son, mm-hmm. or your husband, or your wife, or your how lucky you are to work for somebody you respect. Just think of something you're grateful for right now. It can be tiny. Mm. And when you're in gratefulness or gratefulness, you have no scarcity. You can't be angry. Mm-hmm. You don't resent anything. And you're filled with gratefulness. It's available every minute of every day. Mm-hmm. You can even be grateful the fact that when you turn on the faucet, water comes out. Mm. I mean, clean, fresh, drinkable, washable water for most people. Not everybody, but for most people. You can be grateful for the color yellow. You can be grateful for anything. And Brother David Stendelrost, one of my great teachers, who has a website called gratefulness.org, which is a wonderful place to go when you're stressed or upset or anytime, teaches the power, the transformative power of gratefulness. So that's one thing. And then another thing is to know, well, this is a great phrase from Aristotle. He said this great thing. He said, I love going to the market to see all the things that I don't need.
That's interesting. Yeah, it's back to the farmers markets, I think, are so beautiful because they're really, they share with the heart. You meet a farmer and they've put their life into growing this particular crop, and you see their love and their beauty and their desire for it. And I think there's so much more of a connection that way to box than boxed foods and foods put in containers. And we've gotten so disconnected from the abundance of the earth through the boxing of food. It's a whole other conversation, but it's just my rant. All right. The name of Lynn's book is The Soul of Money. And I will let you know it's on Amazon and you can get the book. And Lynn Twist, my guest, was just on Oprah's Super Soul Sunday this past Sunday. And the response has been absolutely amazing with a refreshing perspective, a transformational perspective on our relationship with money and life. Anyone that you know of, or even yourself, if you'd like to transform or really have an honest, beautiful storytelling relationship with money, this is a wonderful book for you, and it's called The Soul of Money. There's a whole institute that Lynn runs in San Francisco called the Soul of Money Institute, where she lives and spends some of her time there. Most of your time is spent in the rainforest, right? These days.
All over the place, but I'm very grateful to have the opportunity to work with Indigenous people and the Nobel Women's Initiative, which is the Nobel Women, and just people on their relationship with money. I'm actually so right now experiencing my own gratefulness for knowing you, Lisa, and having the opportunity to be on your show and to talk to all the people that are there. And let me just say that there's nothing wrong with expanding your income. At the same time, you can do it in a way that comes from the wholeness and completeness of your life rather than lack. And that's a very different kind of expansion, and it gives you the experience you're really looking for, which is prosperity.
Yes, wholeness rather than lack. Thank you so much, Lynn. And again, you can get her book on Amazon, The Soul of Money. And thank you all so much for listening today. Your energy and your presence makes these shows great and happen, and I appreciate you. Until next time, I invite you to stay aware.